You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up, we'll talk about how communities in northeastern Wisconsin are being trained to better understand and respond to people living with Alzheimer's and dementia.
First, we'll look at the disease's impact on African Americans, who are twice as likely to develop Alzheimer's compared to Caucasians. A study underway at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health is trying to figure out why it affects one racial group more than another.
Clinical neuropsychologist Carrie Gleason joins us now to talk about the $3.8 million study. She's an associate professor of medicine with a focus on geriatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Carrie, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for inviting me to be here.
You are enrolling hundreds of middle-aged African Americans for this study. Can you explain what the study is about?
Sure. We are going to look at modifiable risks in African Americans. And we're, in particular, we're focused on prevention. So rather than wait until you have the disease, we'd like to really strive to look at how we can prevent it, in particular in African Americans.
And what are these modifiable risk factors that you're looking at?
Well, there are a number of different factors. The really interesting part is that this is the risk factors are most active during midlife. So cardiovascular risk factors, emotion, psychological function, even possibly neighborhood.
How are you going to look at these traits, look at these factors, as you follow these study participants?
Well, one of the first things we need to do is enroll a large enough cohort. So a big part of what we're going to do is double our current or existing cohort. We have between the Milwaukee RAP site, that stands for Wisconsin Registry for Alzheimer's Prevention, and our Madison group, enrolled in the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, we have about 250 African Americans. We're looking to double that to 500. So a big part of being able to dissociate these different causes and risk factors is to have a large enough sample. So once you've enrolled this group of individuals, what you want to be able to do is follow them over time. Our most powerful data are these data that tell us about change over time. So if you're looking at risk factors, you're going to start with a middle-aged cohort so that you can look at modifiable risk factors that you can hopefully affect or alter before people develop the disease.
Mm. And why are you focusing exclusively on African Americans? Is this community more at risk?
And that's absolutely. We know that African Americans are at increased risk compared to those groups who are at lower risk. So for late onset dementia, as was mentioned, African American men in particular approach the range of about twice the risk compared to the lowest risk group. And there was a study recently published that showed for late onset dementia that Asian Americans were the group that was at lowest risk. Where in African American men, as I mentioned, were almost twice the risk. African American women had about a 50% increased risk.
And so when you hear the term Alzheimer's disease, dementia, used sometimes almost interchangeably, what's the difference between them and what is your research focused on, one or the other or both?
That's a really good question. That's probably the most popular question I get when I'm out giving talks in the community. Dementia is the syndrome. It's what you can see. It's the behaviors associated with, for example, with memory loss or with not being able to manage day-to-day tasks. Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause. So it's either a single cause or in combination with another form of dementia. We know that African Americans are at increased risk both for Alzheimer's disease dementia as well as some other forms of dementia as well. We know that the really interesting thing is when you dissociate this as a disease versus a syndrome, the disease itself, the current thinking is that it starts decades before the onset of symptoms. So think about this. If average age of dementia onset is in your 70s, when would you want to target prevention measures? And when would you want to start prevention? Midlife. And again, midlife is turning out to be a really key time to look at the disease, the risk factors, are most active during midlife. For example, diabetes. If you develop diabetes in midlife, it raises your risk for dementia and Alzheimer's disease dementia. If you develop it in your 80s, it's not associated with increased risk for dementia. So midlife is turning out to be a really key time.
Which is why you're keying in for your study participants to be middle-aged.
Yeah, and for African-Americans in particular, whose risks for diabetes and hypertension, high cholesterol, all risk factors for Alzheimer's disease, dementia, those are higher prevalence in those groups.
We're talking with neuropsychologist Kerry Gleason. She's an associate professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, talking about a new study that undergoing for African Americans and following them for many years to look at risk of Alzheimer's disease. Kerry, what about neuroimaging and biomarkers? How are they factors in your study?
They're one of our major outcomes. When you look at prevention studies or looking at people who don't have symptoms, you're talking about what's called a preclinical stage. And in the preclinical stage, if you can't measure symptoms or onset of the disease, you've got to have a biomarker. So a typical biomarker, well, actually a definition of a biomarker is a biological measurement that you then tells you about something about the underlying disease. So a classic example of a biomarker is your blood pressure. In and of itself, it's not as meaningful. It's meaningful because it tells you about your risk for heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
So the traditional biomarkers in Alzheimer's disease typically are neuroimaging biomarkers and then looking at proteins in the cerebral spinal fluid, so those two areas. So for our study, we're looking at neuroimaging biomarkers that include your certain structures of the brain, measuring the volume of those structures, in particular the hippocampus,
because mm-hmm.
We know that the hippocampus is shrinking before you develop symptoms. So looking at the size of the hippocampi using neuroimaging techniques, and then also looking at the proteins in cerebral spinal fluid, and those proteins are directly related to the Alzheimer's disease pathology. So the beta amyloid proteins as well as the tau proteins.
So you really have even the chemistry to back up what you're seeing as you track these participants in their daily life.
Yes, and this is what people will, to take this work seriously, you have to have these traditional biomarkers in a preclinical study. Very important. But we've been responding to what the community has said, too. I've gotten this question in the community. Why don't you develop a non-invasive biomarker, or one that doesn't require a brain scan or a cyclotron, if you're going to look at amyloid plaques, we're trying to look at cognitive markers too. So this would be something that you could actually go out to the community with a paper and pencil test and look for these subtle cognitive changes that maybe are not in a raw score per se, but there's some pattern that might emerge that would be helpful in terms of a biomarker.
And in your study, you said something really interesting at the beginning. One of the traits that you're tracking is neighborhood stress.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. It turns out your zip code is pretty powerful, and I have a collaborator, Dr. Amy Kind, who has looked at this in terms of rehospitalization. Your neighborhood is probably a marker for many other psychosocial, environmental, economic stressors that probably play into the overall picture.
And you think Alzheimer's relates to that as well?
Well, we're going to look at it because it is one of these potentially modifiable factors. It's one thing to focus on your genetics or your parental history. Those things you can't change. And this is why it's really important for every avenue we go down with the intention of looking at how we can modify it.
And how can people find out more about your study or enrolling in your study?
Oh, so the website, you go to the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, go to the website, and look for our outreach coordinator. I want to mention in particular my partnerships to make this work possible. So there's one thing to write the grant and be successful at that, but it's incredibly important to have key partners. And I've got Ms. Charlie Daniel, who's at the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance, who's passionate about helping families affected by the disease. And I've also got a partner within our team who really leads our outreach work, who really makes this happen. Like I said, it's one thing to write the grant, but you need people on your team who really make things happen.
Well, Carrie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That was clinical neuropsychologist Carrie Gleason, an associate professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She joined us to talk about her new federal grant that's looking at the impact of Alzheimer's disease in African American communities.
Coming up, a related topic, we'll talk to a guest from the Behavioral Health Training Partnership at UW Green Bay about how they're working to train people to better understand and respond to people with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia.
We'll pick up that conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time.